The Gerontological Society of America, Meaningful Lives as We Age.
Welcome to this GSA Momentum Discussion podcast episode addressing the National Caucus and Center on Black Aging, or NCBA, report, Stuck in the Middle, What Belly Fat is Doing to Your Health. Momentum discussions highlight topics experiencing great momentum in the field of gerontology. We're grateful to Novo Nordisk for their support of the GSA Toolkit for the Management of Obesity in Older Adults and today's podcast episode. My name is Jen Pettis, and I'm the Director of Strategic Alliances at the Gerontological Society of America, or GSA, and I'm delighted to serve as a host for today's momentum discussion. Joining me for today's podcast are Angie Boddy, Director of Health Programs for the NCBA, and Deborah Mathis, a consultant for NCBA and researcher and writer of this report. Angie and Deborah, I'm so glad that you could join me for today's discussion.
Thank you. We're looking forward to a robust chat.
And thank you, Jen. Thank you for having us.
My pleasure. Angie, I'd like to get started with you. What led the NCBA to addressing obesity with this report?
Thank you, Jen. As far as I can recall, NCBA has always worked to address obesity, and we've also worked to increase community awareness about the health problems, such as heart disease, diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and others that may ensue as a result of being overweight. With Stuck in the Middle, we hope to continue to educate and raise awareness among older Black adults and the community at large about the disease of obesity.
Well, you mentioned the report is titled Stuck in the Middle. Deborah, why is it named that?
Well, an attempt to be clever, I guess, if not original. But it also is relevant because the problem that we're talking about is really in the middle of our bodies for the most part. It is where the bad fat, the visceral fat, lives and where it attempts to disable or destroy our internal organs and cause all other kinds of problems. And once that goes, the fat that we pinch all the time, our belly fat and our muffin tops and all of that, love handles, that goes away pretty quickly. If you can really disable that and remove that and reduce the visceral fat. So Stuck in the Middle kind of identifies the location of our problem.
And like you said, it is an original, certainly eye-catching for the report name, that's for sure. Angie, yeah. When we look at the obesity statistics for the U.S. as a whole and compare them to the statistics for Black non-Hispanic Americans, the statistics really are staggering. Tell me about them.
Yes, Jen, you're right. The statistics are staggering. Black older adults have the highest rates of obesity of any race or ethnic group in the United States, followed by American Indians and Alaska Native and Hispanics. About 4 out of 5 Black women are overweight or have obesity. African American girls and women are disproportionately affected by the obesity epidemic, placing them at a higher risk for obesity-related morbidity and mortality. And lastly, African American women who are overweight have obesity, and especially the most severe level of obesity, and are likely to experience health-related risks, including those I spoke to earlier, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, various types of cancer, sleep apnea, osteoarthritis, and among other risks.
Deborah, I want to kind of follow up with you looking at particularly African-American population and consider with all of that level of risk that Angie just shared with us, what are some cultural and heritage considerations that providers and others need to be aware of when they're helping African-Americans to recognize and care for their condition?
It is nuanced, although I have to say that almost all providers, insurers, insurance underwriters, you name it, use the body mass index, BMI. You hear everybody talk about, oh, my BMI is this or that. And just lately here, the American Medical Association has urged physicians and other healthcare providers to stop using BMI and go to a more exact science, like a DEXA scan or something. Because what BMI does not do is distinguish between fat, muscle, and bone. The three components other than water, we're 60% water, but the three components that make up BMI. And that's just a kind of a guesstimate in a way. It really doesn't narrow down what the composition is. Well, it just so happens that in Black bodies, and again, this is generally speaking, in Black bodies, our bone density, mineral density is higher. So our bones will be heavier. Our lean mass, our muscle mass is higher. So our muscles will be heavier. So to assume that some of that is fat is off the mark. And so you can see why they said we've got to find a better way to measure this. But it's the old way that's been around for centuries, actually. And we need some improvement in that area. But let's say that it's close enough for government work, as we used to say, and it does pinpoint that there is something to be concerned about. Well, in the Black community, and again, this is very generalized, I'm not stereotyping here, but I think most people would agree that we tend to like a curvier, more voluptuous body type for women, particularly, not so much voluptuous for men, but for women, we like that body type. And the term on the street that you hear is thick. Oh boy, she's thick, you know, and that really means she's got some meat on her bones. We tend to stay away from the kind of skinny prototype that you see a lot in the fashion houses and among all the television stars, who to me many times look like their head is just two times too big for their bodies because their bodies have shrunken so much. But okay, to each his own. And so there is a conflict a lot of times. A lot of Black women say, well, you know, I don't want to be skinny. Well, this is not talking about being skinny. This is talking about being healthy. Okay, so those cultural differences, they'll go all the way back to Africa. In Africa, the people with more weight on them were considered to be the prosperous ones, the fertile ones, the well-off ones. Obviously, they had food to eat. They weren't starving, you see. So, and that has carried on. Plus, our food types, the preferred food types, and boy, does this change a lot. But I grew up in the South, soul food cooking, lots of good gravy and biscuits and lots of butter and, you know, all of that. That's so yummy, but it is a killer. So it's not that you can't have it, but you shouldn't have it all the time and you shouldn't have a lot of it. That's for sure. Those are cultural and some pop cultural differences that we have to address.
Right. Like you mentioned, all in moderation, right? All the delicious biscuits and all that, but in moderation.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I think that's a really important message, though. I think when you talk about messages for providers, we can't just say, don't ever have those things, right? But how can we make them either in moderation or how can we make them a little bit healthier while still being very culturally appropriate and things like that? So I think that's really an important message as well of respecting the cultural heritage, why helping to make better choices is really valuable.
Right.
And you both have mentioned conditions like heart disease and diabetes. And Deborah, how is obesity inextricably linked to conditions like diabetes and heart disease and cancer? And what are some unique challenges for African Americans related to these diseases that all too often obesity really is the root cause of?
Right. Think about this. We know, we talked about the belly fat that we all can pinch or, you know, that's subcutaneous fat, that's just under the skin fat. The visceral fat, this thing is something else. It lives behind the abdominal muscle, behind the abdominal wall. So you can't pinch it and see it and get to it like that. But what it's doing there is kind of surrounding all your internal organs, your pancreas, your liver, your gallbladder, your kidneys, your intestines, just name it. It's just filling in all the holes, kind of like water seeks its own level, you know. It's filling in all the spaces there, but it's also kind of growing and choking off or inhibiting those organs so that they can't function properly. Now, visceral fat even acts I haven't heard doctors say this, so maybe I'm out of line, but to me, it's almost acting like an organ of its own because it produces these enzymes and these fatty acids and these toxins. So it's not just sitting there. It's putting stuff out that is not good for the body. And so the pancreas starts shutting down, the liver gets too fat and starts shutting down. All of those things happen. And so you end up with diabetes, coronary heart disease, gallbladder disease, high blood pressure, certainly high cholesterol and all of that. All of which, all of those that I named, guess what? African Americans have higher rates of those than do white Americans. Now, is that a coincidence, or does that have something to do with those statistics that Angie spoke of earlier? Is it a coincidence that we also have the highest rates of obesity and these highest rates of things that are caused or aggravated by obesity? I think not. So again, no one's telling you not to look fine and not to be thick and not to adhere to your preferences or your culture, but we're saying get that visceral fat down. Get it down and watch how much better you feel, how much better you look, how much more energy you have, how all of these bad indicators like blood pressure and everything improve. It is fact. No matter what the BMI number may be, you can forget about that. Just look at what benefits you will draw from reducing visceral fat.
Well, I think what you said brings me really to my next question, and that is where in the report you address the weight loss payoff. What exactly, Deborah, is that weight loss payoff?
It's really, I was astonished to learn this, that if wherever your weight is today, if you lose 5 or 10% of that weight, things start getting better immediately. 5 to 10%. So if you weigh 300 pounds, you would only need to lose 30 pounds and then you would see, or even 15 pounds, and you would start seeing your A1C level. That's the one that measures your blood glucose. And, you know, anything like over 6.5 says diabetes. So that will go down. Your insulin resistance, which keeps you from processing glucose properly, because insulin is what makes everything move into the cell to turn into glucose. And it just starts, you have, your body is resistant to it and it starts burning carbohydrates instead of fat as it's designed to do. And so you don't want to have insulin resistance. That goes down tremendously. Triglycerides, the fat deposits in your blood, reduce. They can clog up your arteries, cause stroke, cause heart attack, all kinds of inflammation of the pancreas and other issues. That goes down. Bad cholesterol, down. High blood pressure, down. Inflammation, which I think is probably going to be ruled one day as the number one cause of all disease, because every time you hear any disease, this is inflamed, that is inflamed, this is inflamed. Inflammation is the real villain. It starts going down. So, you know, and not to mention the difference on the weight scale, which is always the most joyous thing in the world to me. Years ago, I got on a class reunion diet. I was going for my 20th class reunion. I was determined not to show up looking like twice the woman I was. And so I went on a real regimen of exercise. I started really walking, brisk walking, and watching what I ate and the portion sizes of what I ate, drinking a lot of water, all of those things. And I was working at it for months. And finally, one day I got on the scale and I had dropped like 7 pounds. So the next day I'm really working out, and then I get right on the scale and I'm still at 7 pounds. But the day after that, I've dropped another 2 pounds. So I'm seeing this and it is so exciting, such a wonderful feeling to feel that way. Well, that was for vanity's sake. This is for health and survival's sake. This is saying you don't have to be sick all the time. You don't have to die early. You don't have to become disabled. There are even now studies that are showing there's some ties to dementia. My mother died of Alzheimer's, and it is a horrible thing to live through. I don't want anybody else to go through that, I don't want to go through it. I don't want to see anybody go through it. And so I took on this project because I really want people to realize there are some things in our control. Habits are very difficult to change. I know that as well as anybody does, you know? And that's why, Jen, I think it was important that you said doctors don't need to say, don't ever eat this again, don't do that, because that triggers something in the brain where you, it seems like you crave that more than you ever have before. And the whole idea of depriving yourself of something forevermore makes you hostile toward the process. So, you know, how are you going to keep up with something that you feel like it is your enemy or working against you or making you so unhappy? So I really hope that nutritionists and doctors and other healthcare providers will be mindful of that. Don't say never when it comes to foods and beverages that we enjoy that are all perfectly legal and safe otherwise. So the payoff is there, though, and it comes soon.
So you mentioned things that doctors and nutritionists and things can help. But Angie, I'd like to close with you. What can African Americans do for themselves? But then what if those things they're doing for themselves prove not enough? Then what do they do?
So Jen, African Americans can investigate the availability and cost of various methodologies that can accurately measure their body fat, and if feasible, urge their doctors to use one of those tools rather than the BMI so that they can get a better picture of their risk status. As Deborah spoke to, you can eat as healthily as you can and get some kind of exercise. Walking is free and you can do it when you want to. And it is turning out to be one of the best forms of exercise. African Americans can also urge their U.S. representatives and senators to support the Treat and Reduce Obesity Act, mandating Medicare cover anti-obesity medications and other therapies that are otherwise cost prohibitive. And these options should be available to everyone. African Americans can advocate for healthier foods and physical education programs in their local schools. Many schools don't have PE. I know that many schools are striving to have healthier lunches, but this should be a common theme amongst all schools. Next, they can pressure their local officials and business leaders to cure food deserts in communities so that every neighborhood has access to a variety of affordable, fresh, and healthy foods. And then lastly, African Americans can go to our website at www.ncba.aging.org and download a copy of Stuck in the Middle. It's free, and they can also share the report with their friends, family, colleagues, anybody, even if they don't have obesity.
May I just step in just to repeat that website address again? It is ncba-aging.org. ncba-aging.org. Please check it out. You can download that whole report or
and
just
we'll
read
make
it
that online. That report will be available in the transcript and our with this podcast as well.
Perfect.
So we'll be sure
Thank
to
you.
Include that. Thank you. Well, this was a terrific discussion, ladies. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedules to join me. Thank you also to those listening to the podcast. We hope you found it informative and enjoyable. Have a great day, ladies. Thanks again.
Thank you, Jen.
Thank you.
The Gerontological Society of America was founded in 1945 to cultivate excellence in interdisciplinary aging research and education to advance innovations in practice and policy. For more information about GSA, visit geron.org. G-E-R-O-N.org.